hours away.
Only 500,000,
Simon quips. Will you at least give me a script for Ambi?
No.
I sigh with exaggeration. What fun is having a stepdad with a prescription pad, then? My phone starts ringing from its resting spot on the hood of Simon's car. Crap, that's Diana. She's in line somewhere, mentally stabbing me. As if on cue, a black Nissan Maxima coasts up to the curb in front of the house. And that's my Uber. I look down at my missing heel and my soiled dress. And I need to change. Simon eases himself off the step and heads toward the waiting garbage can.
I suppose I can manage this last one for you, just this once. After all, you have had quite the day.
He charges forward in a funny shuffle that sends Tim and Sid scurrying into the hedge before struggling to wheel the can into place. For all that makes Simon endearing, he is neither coordinated nor strong. Mom has tried and failed to get him to a gym to add some muscle to his spindly arms. A thought strikes me. What are you going to do about garbage day if I go to Alaska?
Well, of course, your mother will take care of it.
He waits a beat before turning to meet my doubtful smirk and mutters in that dry British way he has,
That would be a bloody cold day in hell now, wouldn't it?
Chapter 3 You have to go! Diana yells over the throbbing bass, pausing long enough to flash a pearly white grin at the bartender as he sets our drink order on the bar. It's beautiful up there! You've never been to Alaska. Well, yeah, but I've seen Into the Wild. All that wilderness and the mountains. Just don't eat the berries. She makes a dramatic show of placing a $10 tip down so the bartender notices. A trick for a priority service the next round. Meanwhile, the bartender's eyes are busy dragging over the plunging neckline of my cobalt blue dress, the first thing I yanked out of my closet in my rush to change and get out the door. He's cute, but short and brawny, with a shaved head and a full sleeve of ink. Not my tall and lean, clean-cut, inkless type. And besides, I'm not in the mood to flirt in exchange for free shots. I humor him with a tight smile and then turn my attention back to Diana. It's not like that on the western side of Alaska. Cheers! We down our shots in unison. What's it like? The sickly sweet concoction makes me grimace slightly. Flat. What do you mean? Flat like the prairies? No, I mean, yeah, it's probably flat like there, but it's really cold. Like Arctic cold. Whereas our Midwest provinces are home to the vast majority of our country's farmland, nothing thrives where my dad is from. The growing season's too short. That's according to my mom, anyway. And the woman has a bachelor's degree in plant science from the University of Guelph. If anyone would know, I'd think it would be her. Arctic? Diana's cornflower blue eyes widen with excitement. Seriously? Think how amazing that could be for Calla and Dee. You're the one who said we needed to find an original angle. You said we need to get out of the city. I was thinking more a trip to Sandbanks or Lake of Bays. New, pretty, and picturesque places that we can get to within a few hours by car. What's more original and out of the city than a lifestyle blogger in the Arctic? Diana's matte, mauve-colored lips curl into a hopeful smile as no doubt a spiderweb of ideas is spinning in her head. Last year, we started a small website, aptly named Calla and Dee, an avenue to share our passion for the latest lipstick shades and shoe styles just for fun. I should have known when Diana asked me to split the cost of a website designer that she already had lofty goals and that this hobby was going to grow legs of its own. Now we exchange texts about the site all day long, ideas for future posts, and who's doing what that seems to be working. Instead of a simple blog, we have entire sections, fashion, food, beauty, entertainment, and a strict weekly schedule to adhere to. I spend my commutes and lunch hours scrolling through newsletters and blog posts in order to educate myself on the latest, retailers announcing sales, fashion industry leaders announcing the latest trends, other lifestyle bloggers who we befriend online in the name of networking. My evenings are for updating links, loading content, tweaking aesthetics, tasks that Diana abhors, but I don't mind and I'm actually good at. Diana and I meet up in a new restaurant every Thursday night to bounce around ideas and taste test appetizer menus for our grazing in the city section. One Saturday a month is for scouring discount racks for trendy clothes to style ourselves with, and every Sunday afternoon, we hunt for the perfect settings in downtown Toronto, colorful graffiti in alleyways, the spring cherry blossoms of High Park, the Distillery District's picturesque Christmas market. We take Simon's pricey Canon with us, swapping out cute outfits in the back seat of Diana's Tahoe and taking turns pretending we're not posing for the camera. I've learned far more about sightlines and shutter speed and the rule of three than I ever expected to. And it's all in the name of grabbing that perfect lifestyle snapshot. Nice outfits on park benches and in city streets with blurred backgrounds and feel-good captions about love and happiness and spirituality. We get caught up in what-if conversations all the time. What if we hit 100,000 followers? What if companies started sending us clothes and makeup samples to promote so we don't have to spend half our paychecks anymore? What if we become Instagram famous? It's a daydream for me, a goal for Diana. But we have a long way to go before we're being featured on any best of lists. And more lately, I fear that all our efforts have been a waste. After a year of hard work, we have a frustratingly modest following of almost 400 returning visitors to our website. Our separate Instagram profiles, the two halves of Calla and Dee, have more. Diana's is triple mine, which isn't surprising given she is obsessed with learning the latest expert tips and tricks about building an audience and curating photos and tagging appropriately, about how to word captions to be upbeat and inspirational. She responds to every last comment on her posts and spends her lunch hour interacting with strangers, hoping to attract their attention and their following. Still, even with all Diana's diehard efforts and determination, we can't seem to gain any traction. At this point, it's nothing more than a 40-hour-a-week hobby, grappling with finding ideas for how-tos and top tens that haven't been done before, that people might want to read. My gut says we're missing a key ingredient, originality. Right now, we're just two more attractive city girls who love to pose and talk about makeup and clothes. There's a sea of us. It's not really the Arctic, not where he lives anyway. It's somewhere in between the Arctic and normal civilization. It's like the last frontier. I echo something I read about Alaska once, silently admitting that I don't know much about where I was born. Even better! And you'll have a bunch of planes at your disposal. I doubt they'll be at my disposal. And I'll be alone. How am I going to get any good shots? We cringe in unison at the thought of a selfie stick. Diana's not to be swayed, though. Someone there will be willing to take pictures of a beautiful Canadian girl. Maybe a hot American pilot. I sigh. Have you forgotten why I'd be going in the first place? No, I'm just... Her face turns serious, her perfectly shaped blonde brows ruffling, trying to make it not so depressing. We collect our martinis and ease our way out from the bar. Our spots are instantly swallowed up by the crowd. Diana wasn't exaggerating. This club must be testing fire code violations. I can't stand anywhere without being nudged from at least two sides at any given time. I suck back a mouthful of my drink as we weave through the throbbing crowd, shrugging off the male hands that graze my arm and pinch my sides in brazen attempts to gain my attention, hoping I don't spill anything with all the bumping and jostling. Finally, we squeeze into a small vacant space near a pillar. So where's Corey tonight? Diana asks. Working. Her nose crinkles subtly, as if a mild but unpleasant odor lingers and she's trying her best to pretend she doesn't smell it. I think Diana might be the only person on Earth who doesn't like Corey. It took 5 months and 6 margaritas apiece in the back of a Mexican restaurant for my best friend to finally admit that to me. He tries too hard to be liked, she said, and he's handsy, and the way he stares at her when she's talking feels flirtatious. It makes her uncomfortable. She simply doesn't trust him not to break my heart. To say I didn't like hearing that is an understatement. I told her she was jealous that I had someone and she didn't. We parted ways under a dark cloud that night, and I woke up the next day with a throbbing head from the alcohol and an aching heart from fear that our friendship had been irreparably damaged. Simon swiftly talked me down from that ledge, though, as only he can do, by pointing out all the times Diana had been there for me over the years, through all the boyfriends, even when she didn't have one, and that if she was jealous, it was more than likely because she felt her importance in my life was being threatened, a normal affliction for best friends at our age. Diana and I made up that same afternoon, over plenty of tears and apologies, and she promised she'd give Corey another shot. Thankfully, Aaron came into the picture a few months later, and I've firmly fallen to second rung. I'm not complaining, though. I've never seen her this happy or serious about a guy. Just 2 weeks ago, she mentioned buying a condo with Aaron next year, which means she'll finally stop pestering me to move in with her. I love my best friend, but she drains hot water tanks with her long showers, she cleans everything with a skin-melting dose of bleach, and she likes to clip her toenails while watching TV. And if she can't sleep, no one is sleeping. Have fun living with that, Aaron. So when would you go? Diana asks, her gaze flitting this way and that, searching the crowd even as she talks to me. The sooner the better if my dad is going to start chemo or radiation or whatever the doctors are recommending. The only other person I've ever known with lung cancer was Mrs. Hagler, the old lady who lived in the house behind us. She was a longtime friend of Simon's parents and didn't have any family of her own left, so Simon sometimes took her to the hospital for her chemo. That went on for years before she succumbed. Near the end, she spent a lot of time sitting in her backyard wearing a knit hat that covered her sparse fuzz, puffing away on a cigarette while her oxygen tank sat 2 feet away. She'd made peace with what was coming by that point. My dad's friend said there was a flight available for Sunday, so I guess maybe then, if it's not taken by tomorrow. She said she'd buy the ticket, but I don't want to fly there on her dime. I mean, what if this ends up being a horrible idea and I want to leave as soon as I get there? You'd feel like you owe it to her to stick around, Diana agrees. She takes a sip of her drink and makes a face. The bartender mixed this round extra strong. Get Daddy Warbucks to buy your ticket from his secret stash then. We all know the shrink is good for it. Diana is convinced that Simon has a secret vault beneath our century-old house and spends his nights inventorying his mountain of gold coins. While he does make a lot of money on fragile psyches, it's highly unlikely that he could ever amass such riches given my mother's taste for the finer things. She's even worse than me in that regard. But seriously, Calla, Simon's right. If you don't go and your dad doesn't pull through, you will regret it. I know you. And she does. Better than anyone else. Diana and I have been best friends since I started at the private school a few blocks away from our house. I was 11 and didn't know another soul. She painted my fingernails robin's egg blue during recess. It's still my favorite color. She knows all about my father and the heartache he's caused me over the years. She also knows all the unasked questions that I still long for answers to. Mainly, why is Alaska Wilde more important to Ren Fletcher than his own flesh and blood? Still, this feels like a huge risk, one I'm not sure I have the guts to take. What if he's nothing more than a deadbeat dad? then you'll know once and for all that he's a deadbeat dad. She pauses. Or maybe he's actually a decent guy and there's this whole other side of him that you'll get to know and love.
Yeah, I guess, I say doubtfully. Another darker worry strikes me. But then what if he doesn't get better? It would be like losing him all over again, only this time, it wouldn't be just the idea of him.
Then you'll have something real to hold on to. Look, we can play this what-if game all summer long, or you can get answers. Oh, hey!
Diana waves to someone behind me. A moment later, surprise, surprise, Aaron swoops in. I avert my gaze as they share a long, movie-screen-worthy kiss, my annoyance flaring. Normally, I wouldn't care, but tonight, after the day I've had, I needed my best friend's undivided attention, just this once.
Heard about the job, Callie. That sucks.
At 6'4", even in my heels, Aaron towers over me. I have to tip my head back to meet his inky blue eyes. It does, but it's just a job, right? Funny how that line comes out a little more easily now that I have the distraction of my father to focus on. I wish I'd get canned with 4 months' pay, Diana laments. She works as a paralegal at a mid-sized law firm and hates every second of it, which I'm guessing is part of the reason she puts so much energy into our side project.
My buddy's a headhunter for the banks. He'll hook you up with a new job right away,
Aaron offers. Thanks. I sigh, pushing aside my dour mood. Nice beard, by the way. He smooths a palm over the well-trimmed, licorice-black hair that coats his jaw.
It's holding up pretty good, eh?
It is, I agree, admiring the sharp lines. Where on earth did you ever find such a talented barber?
It was a barberette, actually.
He grins.
A smoking hot barberette.
Stop hitting on my best friend, and making up words. Diana shoots him a stern look, but she follows it up with a wink. 2 months ago, Diana decided that we needed to do a post called Turn Your Bushman Boyfriend into an Urban Gentleman. For the good of all womankind, she insisted, or at least for the girlfriend of the attractive but hairy and unkempt server who plied us with copious amounts of wine and spanakopita at the Greek restaurant on Danforth. So she roped in Aaron to be our guinea pig for a live demo. Being the supportive boyfriend that he is, the baby-faced Aaron went without shaving, complaining only 100 times, but he surprised us and himself by growing a respectably thick layer of hair. Neither Diana nor I had ever shaved a man's face before, but I have more experience with clippers given that I'd volunteered at an animal shelter for credit during high school and spent a semester beautifying bedraggled dogs to up their chances of adoption. So we decided I was up for the task. I devoured dozens of tutorials on YouTube in preparation, and last weekend, under the watchful lens of Diana's iPhone camera, I transformed Aaron's shabby scruff into magazine model-worthy beard status. Aaron finally looks like a 28-year-old man instead of an 18-year-old boy. Diana reaches up to draw dainty fingers along his jaw. That was the most popular post we've done yet. All those thirsty females. Those thirsty females, and the fact that the company whose tools Diana bought featured our video in their social media, after we tagged them. My ears were ringing for a good half hour after Diana called me, squealing with hysteria. Aaron grins, earning another eye roll from Diana. He's read every last comment on that post, his ego basking in the glory.
I was hoping Calla could freshen it up this...
No. Diana gives him a pointed look.
But she's already done it once.
For Calla and Dee, but that's it. It's too intimate. Right, Calla?
I guess. Aaron and I share a frown. I mean, it didn't feel that way to me, but...
Besides, she's going to Alaska on Sunday.
I haven't decided yet, I start to say, but Diana has already leaned into Aaron's ear to reiterate the phone call from Agnes. I watch his face fall.
I'm sorry, Calla. Man, you've had a shitty day.
Cheers to that. I lift my martini in the air.
Well, my friend went to Alaska a few years ago, and he still raves about it. I'm sure it'll be an experience, even if the reason behind it sucks.
Did you know Calla was born in Alaska? Yeah, her dad owns a freaking airline. It's more like a charter plane company, I think. Like 100 planes. A couple dozen small planes, maybe, I guess, because I have no idea. And the last time I tried trolling my dad on the internet, I found little more than a directory listing and an Alaska Wild landing page that said, check back soon. She's going to make her dad's pilots fly her all over the place so she can take cool shots for the site.
Awesome.
Aaron points to my half-finished martini.
I'll get you ladies another round.
Though he has never said a word about it, I'm sure he'd be happy to not hear Diana talk about Calla and Dee for one night. Stealing a quick kiss from her lips, because he always kisses Diana whenever he's stepping away from her, just like Corey used to, Aaron weaves through the crowd toward the bar. I fucking love this club! Diana hollers, shimmying her shoulders to the music. The number of fucks she voices is in direct proportion to how many drinks she's had. She must be starting to feel the alcohol. I know I am. Really? I was just thinking it's getting a bit stale. I sip at my drink and let my gaze wander over the crowd again, wondering how many people they've packed in here. 500? 1,000? It's hard to tell. I used to feel a rush as I stepped through these doors. I'd get giddy as the music vibrated through my limbs and all around me, a sea of revelers dancing, drinking, laughing, kissing. I'm not feeling that rush. It's probably the day I've had, but the DJ is lackluster. His set is similar to last week's. In fact, I'll bet it is last week's set. And the week before's. And the week before that's. I doubt I can even muster the urge to dance. Hey! Diana nudges me with her elbow, her eyebrows waggling suggestively. Arabian admirer at 3 o'clock. I turn to my right to see a tall, ebony-haired guy standing about 6 feet away with a group of friends, his near-black gaze locked on me, his smirk flirtatious. A whoa slips through my lips as a rash of butterflies churns in my belly. He's attractive and built. Not my usual type, but he's the kind of attractive that would make him any girl's type. God knows how long he's been sizing me up over there, waiting to catch my eye, hoping for a returning smile, the bat of my lashes, a wink, anything to give him the green light. I'll bet his voice is deep. I'll bet his skin smells of citrus and peppery cologne, and he has to shave twice a day to keep that chiseled jaw smooth. I'll bet he likes to stand inside a girl's personal space as he talks to her, not close enough to crowd her, but just enough to make her feel a hint of intimacy, a craving for a touch. I'll also bet he never leaves the club alone, but he always, gladly, wakes up by himself. And that telling him I have a boyfriend won't scare him away. But I do have a boyfriend, I remind myself. Jesus, Calla, this is the third time in the past few weeks that I've found myself drooling over an attractive guy. Twice at a club and once while seated at a park bench over lunch, when a blonde in a tailored pinstripe suit strolled past me, leaving me slack-jawed. I make a point of hardening my expression and turning my back to him, hoping he won't mistake it for coyness and will simply move on. Picking up girls at clubs is like baseball for those kinds of guys, only with way more chances to swing before they strike out. Hey! Diana frowns, her narrowed gaze now locked on the bar. Isn't that Corey? I spot the familiar-looking mane of lush blonde curls. Maybe? The tall, lanky guy certainly looks like Corey from behind, and his shoulders hunch over slightly like Corey's do. And he's dressed like Corey would be, in a fitted and stylish black-collared shirt and tailored dress pants. The guy turns to show his youthful, clean-shaven profile, confirming our guess. I try to ignore the feeling in the pit of my stomach as I dig my phone out of my purse, thinking that perhaps he called to check in after all. Nothing. Not even a text. Diana scowls. Who's he with? I zero in on the faces around him. I've met three of them before. Co-workers. I guess this is what he meant by having to work late, I mutter. Well, I guess we should go over there and... Her words drift as there's a part in the crowd and the diminutive female tucked in beside him appears. The one whose back Corey has his hand settled on, midway down in a semi-affectionate way. The way that says they're not together, but he desperately wants them to be. We watch as he leans down, says something in her ear, and then pulls away. No doubt something witty. I've always loved his sense of humor. Her long chestnut brown hair sways as she tips her head back and laughs, earning his grin. I can almost see the twinkle in his eyes, the same one that charmed me so long ago, when we would come out to the club with our friends and stand at the bar, his hand settled on my back like that. A sinking feeling settles into my chest as pieces click together. Stephanie DuPont started working at the advertising agency about 3 months ago. I met her once at a party. She had a boyfriend then, but does she still? Because Corey looks like he's putting in his application. So you're going to go over there and throw your drink in his face, right? Diana says through gritted teeth. No, wait. Don't waste your drink. Use this one. She grabs a random glass from the ledge where someone left it, half full of melting ice and mangled lemon slices. I contemplate it for a split second. Why bother? Diana's eyebrows crawl halfway up her forehead. Because he lied to you about working tonight? Because he's right over there, one drink away from cheating on you. And with a major downgrade, by the way. I mean, come on. Look at you, and then look at her. I can't see her face, but I remember her being cute and wholesome, with deep dimples and a friendly smile. I don't answer, and Diana's voice turns shrill. How are you not more upset right now? I don't know. Sure, it stings, but if I'm being honest with myself, that bite probably has more to do with my ego than anything else. My heart should be aching with loss. My stomach should be twisting with betrayal. My eyes should be burning with emotion. But if anything, what I'm feeling right now could be described more like a mixture of disappointment and relief. Diana huffs. Well, what are you going to do? I shake my head as I try to make sense of it. My year-long relationship with the seemingly perfect guy is unraveling in front of me, and I'm not feeling any urge to storm over there and fight for it. Wait, I know. Diana spins around. Where is he? Who? That guy. That beautiful guy over there who was drooling over you. No. I grab hold of her with my free hand to stop her because when Diana gets an idea in her head, I am not going to hook up with some stranger to get back at Corey. Well, but... She sputters. You have to do something. You're right. I do. I clink my glass against hers before downing the rest of my drink, my legs itching to whisk me away before Corey notices me here. I'm going home. And then, I guess I'm going to Alaska. Chapter 4. These are nice. My mother holds up the new pair of military red hunter rain boots. Right? Except they take up a lot of room. I'm not sure if I should bring them. Trust me, bring them. She lays them into the suitcase I've reserved for footwear and toiletries, that's already brimming, and then takes a seat on my bed, her finger toiling with a small pile of price tags heaped by my pillow. Evidence of the Alaska wardrobe flash shopping spree I went on yesterday. You sure you're only going for a week? You're the one who taught me that overpacking is key.
Yes, of course, you're right. Especially where you're going. You won't be able to just run out and grab something that you've forgotten. They won't even have a mall. She cringes at the very idea of mall shopping. There is literally nothing there. It's a barren wasteland. Yes, I remember. I cram a pair of wool socks resurrected from my winter clothing bins into the corner of a second suitcase. You haven't been there in 24 years, though. Maybe it's changed. They have a movie theater now. I know because I Googled things to do in Bangor, Alaska, and that popped up. It was the only indoor activity to pop up, besides weekly knitting classes and a community book club, two things I have no interest in. Bangor could have doubled in size, tripled even. She smiles, but it's the condescending kind of smile. Towns in Alaska don't grow that quickly, or at all in most cases. Reaching for one of my favorite fall sweaters, a $200 soft pink cashmere wrap that Simon and Mom gave me for Christmas, she folds it tidily. If I know your dad at all, that house is the same as when we left. Maybe seeing it will jog an early childhood memory. Or give you nightmares. She chuckles, shaking her head. That god-awful, tacky wallpaper that Roseanne put up was the worst. Roseanne, my father's mother. My grandmother, who I was too young to remember ever meeting. I talked to her occasionally over the phone, and she sent birthday and Christmas cards every year, right up until she died when I was 8. Agnes probably took down the tacky wallpaper.
Maybe.
Mom sniffs, averting her gaze. Do you still love my dad, even now? I bite my tongue against the urge to ask her about what Simon told me. He's right. She'll never admit to it, and I don't want to make Simon's life hell for the entire time that I'm gone. Things have already been tense around the house as it is. Mom went to sleep on Thursday thinking about blush rose table arrangements and orchid bridal bouquets, and woke up to news of a woman named Agnes, my dad's cancer diagnosis, and my impending trip to Alaska. I can't tell what upsets her most, the fact that there's another woman, or that my father is seriously sick. All of it has left her unsettled. I caught her standing in front of the bay window in the kitchen, clutching her mug and staring off into nothingness at least a half dozen times. For a woman who's always on the go, that's a jarring sight. Still, I can't skirt the question entirely. You would never leave Simon for Dad, would you, Mom?
What?
No. A deep frown pulls her brow tight as if she's reconsidering her answer after she's given it.
Why would you ask that?
No reason. I hesitate. Have you talked to him at all?
No.
She shakes her head, then pauses. I did send him an email a few years ago, though, with a copy of your U of T grad picture, so he'd know what his daughter looked like. Her voice trails, her eyes transfixed on a chip in her coral nail polish. And? Did he ever answer? Did he care enough to?
He did. He said he couldn't believe how much you'd grown. How much you looked like me.
She smiles sadly. I didn't keep the conversation going, though. I figured it was for the best. You're not going to need that, she says, eyeing the striped tank top that I've laid on top of my other clothes, swiftly changing the topic. Didn't you just say to pack for every situation? They're calling for highs of only 14 degrees Celsius all week, 4 at night. Then I'll put a sweater over top. She smooths a hand over the bedspread. So, Ren is picking you up in Anchorage? I shake my head through a mouthful of water. This intense heat wave that shifted into southern Ontario has refused to vacate, making the third floor of this house stuffy, despite the air conditioning that pumps through the vents. Some guy named Jonah is picking me up.
Why not your dad?
I don't know. Maybe he's not feeling well enough to fly. What shape will he be in when I get there? My email exchanges with Agnes have been focused on travel arrangements, not his current state of health.
But he knows you're coming, right?
Of course he does.
Agnes said they'd have my room ready, and they were so happy I was coming. Her mouth twists with worry.
What kind of plane?
One that stays in the air, hopefully. She spears me with a sharp look.
This is not funny, Calla. Some of your father's planes are tiny, and you're flying through the mountains, and it'll be fine. You're the one who's afraid of flying, remember?
You should have waited for a commercial flight. They fly those Dash 8s to Bangor daily now, she mutters.
There weren't any seats available on whatever you said until Tuesday. I'm heading to Alaska, and suddenly Mom's a plane model expert. Relax. You're being dramatic.
You'll see.
She gives me a smug look, but it fades quickly.
When's he starting treatment?
I don't know. I'll find out when I get there.
Mom huffs. And you're connecting through where again?
Minnesota, Seattle, Anchorage. It's going to be a grueling day of travel, and not even to anywhere exotic like Hawaii or Fiji, places I'd eagerly spend a day flying to. But the flip side is that 24 hours from now, I'll be standing face to face with Ren Fletcher after 24 years. My stomach squeezes.
Mom drums her fingertips over her knee.
Are you sure you don't want me to drive you to the airport? I can get someone to start doing the arrangements for me.
I'm struggling to maintain my patience. I have to be there at 4 a.m. I'll grab a cab. I'll be fine, Mom. Stop fretting. She tucks a strand of hair behind her ear. We used to have matching hair color, but now that she dyes it to cover the invading gray, she's opted for a darker shade of brown with hints of copper. I know what this all boils down to. It's not the long distance or the tiny plane or the fact that I'll be away for a week that's got her so unsettled.
He can't hurt me any more than he already has, I say more softly.
The silence in the room is deafening.
He's not a bad man, Calla.
Maybe not, but he's a shitty father. I struggle to tug the suitcase zipper closed.
Yes, he is.
Still, I'm glad you're going. It's important that you meet him at least once. She studies a small wound on her thumb, likely a prick from a rose thorn.
All those years of smoking. I begged him to quit.
You'd think he would after watching your grandfather wither away from damn cigarettes.
Mom shakes her head. Her brow, smoother than it should be at her age, thanks to rounds of laser skin care and fillers, furrowing ever so slightly. Maybe he did quit, and it was too late. But if he hasn't, I'm sure the doctor will make him quit now. I haul a suitcase to its wheels, dusting my hands for impact. One down. Mom's hazel green gaze rolls over me.
Your highlights look nice.
Thanks. I had to grovel to get Fausto to squeeze me in last night. I glance in a nearby mirror as I brush a strand of blonde hair off my face. He went lighter than I wanted, but I don't have time to fix it before I go. I can't help but notice the dark circles lingering under my eyes, which even a thick smear of concealer can't hide. The last 2 days have been a whirlwind of shopping, primping, packing, and planning. Breaking up with my boyfriend.
So, you and Corey are officially over?
Mom asks, as if she can read my mind. I cut the shiny red ribbon and everything.
Are you okay?
I sigh. I don't know what I am. It feels like my life has been turned upside down. I'm still waiting for the dust to settle. After I left the club on Thursday, Diana made a point of bumping into Corey accidentally, because she would have exploded from indignation otherwise, to let him know that he'd just missed his girlfriend. I'd bet money that she delivered her perfect, poison-laced smile as she walked away, satisfied to make Corey squirm. I woke up the next morning to a voice message from him. His tone was lighthearted as he gave some lame-ass excuse about how he ended up at the club. He didn't say a word about Stephanie DuPont, or why he was practically draped over her at the bar. I didn't respond right away, giving him a dose of the medicine he's been dishing out recently. Childish? Maybe. But I needed more time to sort out my thoughts and feelings, something I still wasn't entirely clear on after spending the night staring at the slanted ceiling above my head as the hours reached for dawn. I needed more time to face the truth. Corey did love me at one time, or at least he thought he did, and I was so sure I loved him too, back at the height of our relationship, after the newness wore off, but before the comfort began to fray at the seams. We had a good thing going on. We never argued. We were never jealous or rude to each other. If I had to choose one word to describe our relationship, it'd be smooth. As in, our relationship has operated without a hitch. There is no reason for us not to work. We are textbook perfect together. And we have grown bored. Whatever magic there was in the beginning has been fizzling away, like a slow leak in a tire after it has taken a nail. You could go on for months without knowing something's wrong until one day you end up stranded on the side of the road with a flat. At least that's what I've heard about the slow leaks in tires. I've never actually experienced one. I don't even have my license. But I do have to face facts. The enamored Calla and Corey, who posed for the camera on that pile of rocks last year, took a long, sharp nail somewhere along the way, likely before Stephanie DuPont ever came into the picture. It's the only reason I can come up with for why seeing Corey flirting with another girl didn't gut me, and why I wasn't more than mildly irritated that he couldn't make time for me after the day I'd had, and why I didn't bother trying to phone him after learning of my father's illness, in the small hope that he might answer and give me comfort in the sound of his voice. I think, buried deep down somewhere, I already sensed that our relationship was evaporating. I just hadn't admitted it to myself yet. Maybe because I was hoping it wasn't true, or, more likely, because once I did acknowledge reality, I'd feel like I would have to do something about it. And what if Corey didn't feel the same way I felt? What if he thought everything was perfect between us and begged me not to end things? What if I hurt him? All unconscious worries simmering beneath the surface. All reasons to avoid confronting him. At least reasons for me, a girl who is acutely allergic to confrontation. It's my one defining Ren quality, my mom has said. My dad is ninja level at avoiding conflict and, well, apple and tree, apparently, even if I landed 5,500 kilometers away. Sure, I can throw a verbal jab like the best of them when you push me far enough, but when it comes to truly facing someone or something that pains me, I run from my own shadow. But I'd run out of places to hide, the truth now glaringly obvious. I couldn't imagine flying off to Alaska to meet my dad with this on my mind. So I sent a text to Corey on Friday night, mentioning the trip and how I thought maybe it would be better for us if we took a break, with all he had going on at work and stuff. His response? Yeah, I was thinking the same. Take care of yourself. Safe flight. It's like he was waiting for an out. I shouldn't be surprised, though. He dances around sticky situations with the best of them, the best being me. And thus, the official end to my 14-month relationship, via text, minimal confrontation achieved. Mom eases off my bed. It's late, Calla. You need to get some sleep. I know. I'm just gonna grab a shower first. She reaches for me and gives me a tight hug that lasts several beats too long. Oh my God! I'll be back next Sunday! I laugh, squeezing her slender frame back just as hard. What are you going to be like when I move out? She peels away to stroke the long strands of hair off my face, blinking against her glossy eyes. Simon and I have discussed it, and you are never moving out. We've begun building a dungeon for you downstairs. Next to his secret money vault, I hope. Across from it. I'll remove your collar when it's time for our shows. Or you could just put a TV in my dungeon. She mock gasps. Why didn't I think of that? We wouldn't have to listen to Simon's whining in the background. Simon detests our mutual love of cheesy reality TV and violent Viking shows, and he can't help but pass through the living room while we're watching, sometimes dropping witty but mostly annoying commentary. Finally releasing me, she moves languidly to the doorway. She lingers, though, studying me as I kneel on top of the second stuffed suitcase and tug at the zipper. You should probably bring a book or two. You meant MacBook, right? I can't get past a chapter in a book without falling asleep, and she knows it.
I figured as much.
A pause.
I hope they have internet there.
Oh my God. You're kidding, right? Panic hits me as my mind begins to spin with the possibility that they don't. I spent a long weekend at a cottage near Algonquin Park once and had to drive 15 minutes up the road to get enough bars on my phone to retrieve my texts. It was hell. But no. Agnes answered her emails right away. They totally have internet, I say with certainty. Mom shrugs.
Just prepare yourself. Life out there is different. Harder. And yet, simpler, if that makes any sense.
A nostalgic smile touches her lips.
You know, your dad used to try and get me to play checkers. Every single night he'd ask, even though he knew I hate board games. Used to annoy the hell out of me.
She frowns. I wonder if he still plays. Kind of hoping he doesn't.
You're going to be bored out of your mind within a day and looking for things to do, she warns.
I'm sure I'll be hanging out at the airport a bit. I heave the second suitcase to its wheels. You know, watching planes crash.
Calla?
I'm kidding. She sighs heavily.
Just don't make the same mistake I did and fall in love with one of those pilots.
I chuckle. I'll try my best not to.
I'm being serious.
It's not a firehouse, Mom. She holds her hands in the air in surrender.
Fine, I know, but there's something about those guys that work up there. I can't explain it. I mean, they're crazy. Landing on glaciers and mountain ridges, flying through whiteouts. They're like,
her eyes search for words within my walls.
Sky cowboys.
Oh my God, I burst out laughing. Do I seem like the kind of girl who'd fall for some Alaskan sky cowboy? I can barely get the words out. She levels me with a flat look.
Do I?
Fair point. My mom had always been glamorous. Her earlobes are never without diamonds, and she could make a pair of leggings and a worn concert t-shirt look sophisticated. She'd set herself on fire before sliding on a pair of mom jeans. I carefully navigate around my furniture, wheeling the two enormous suitcases to the landing outside my door.
Those look back-breakingly heavy,
Mom murmurs.
They are back-breakingly heavy.
We eye the steep flights of oak stairs that wind all the way to the ground floor, recently stained a dark walnut, the spindles and risers painted a warm white. And then holler in unison, Simon! Chapter 5.
Yeah, there's only a couple carriers that work well enough up here.
The middle-aged cab driver flashes a crooked-toothed grin over his shoulder as I scowl at the lack of bars on my screen.
I guess mine isn't one of them, I mutter, tucking my phone away.
So much for the U.S. International plan I purchased this morning while waiting for the first of my flights to board. I'm praying that my dad has Wi-Fi at his house, or this week will test my sanity like never before. The driver smoothly navigates the van along the road toward the small regional airport where my fourth and last plane awaits me. I found him standing at the baggage carousel, holding a sign with Calla Fletcher scrawled across it. After 15 hours of traveling, thanks to a delay in Seattle, I'm grateful for the prearranged ride. I shift my focus to a small ski plane as it climbs into the sky over us. Its red paint vibrant against the bright blue canvas. How does it compare to the one I'm about to fly in?
First time in Anchorage?
Yeah.
What brings you here?
I'm visiting someone. The man is just making conversation, but right now my stomach is roiling. I try to calm myself by taking deep breaths and concentrating on the scenery. On the tranquil, cobalt water ahead, the lush evergreens in every direction, and the snow-capped mountain range in the far distance. This is the landscape that Diana assumed when I said Alaska. On the last flight, I had a window seat for the descent, and I spent all of it pressed against the glass, mesmerized by the vast mosaic of treetops and lakes. How different will my end destination look? Is Bangor far by plane? It's early evening and the sun is still high, with no hint of it going down anytime soon. Will we get there before dark?
About 400 miles, an hour's ride. Somewhere in and around that, anyway.
I release a shaky breath against this odd mix of eagerness, dread, and fear. An hour and a bit until I meet my father.
I take it that's where you're going, then? Bangor, I mean.
Yeah. Have you been?
Not in years. But they've got them Dash 8s flying out that way a couple times a day. So who are you flying with?
Alaska Wild. He nods.
Fletcher's planes. They're good. They've been around a long time.
There's something familiar in the way he says my last name, a way that pricks at my senses. Do you know him? Ren Fletcher, I mean?
Yes, ma'am.
The driver nods for emphasis.
I've been doing this job for 20 years now. You recognize faces after a while, and Ren's come out to Anchorage enough times for me to get to know him. In fact, I gave him a ride to the hospital not that long ago. He had a nasty cough he needed looked at, some sort of bug.
My stomach tightens. Yeah, a bug. One that will slowly kill him.
Hey, wait a minute.
He frowns as he lifts the clipboard with the sign he was holding at pickup.
You related?
I hesitate. He's my dad. Why does it sound deceptive to say that? It sounds like I know him. Like I've seen him since leaving this very city 24 years ago. But the truth is, this shuttle driver knows him better than I do.
You're Ren Fletcher's girl?
His murky green eyes catch mine in the rearview mirror, and I see the incredulous look in them before he refocuses on the road ahead.
Didn't know he had one.
He mumbles under his breath, but I hear it all the same. I stifle my sigh. I'm not sure he remembers he does. Will we be taking off over the water? I pause to give my foot a shake. The loose stone caught between my toes tumbles out.
Nah, we've got a gravel runway too.
Billy, the short 20-something grounds crewman who met me at the main door of Lake Hood Seaplane Airport, drags his work boots along the ground, my suitcases wheeling clumsily behind him.
Jonah flew in with his cub.
Is that a smaller plane? I ask warily. And is it normal that everyone talks about planes in terms of models around here? He looks over his shoulder at me, doing a quick head-to-toe, his seventh since I met him, and grins.
Why? You scared?
No, just curious. I scan the row of planes to our left, and the people milling about them.
Don't worry, you'll be fine. Jonah's one of the best pilots around. He should be done refueling by now. He'll have you on your way soon.
Great. I inhale deeply, enjoying the crisp, fresh air after hours of breathing in who knows how many germs circulating in the cabins. It's an even more welcome change from the smog back home. Another sharp stone catches under my toe, one that doesn't easily shake out. I have to bend over and pick it out by hand, my other hand pressed against my Brixton to hold it in place. Wearing a wide-brimmed hat probably wasn't the smartest move for this many plane rides. But it's not like I could pack it. Maybe I should switch to my chucks. But these 3-inch strappy wedges are surprisingly comfortable and, more importantly, they look amazing with my ripped jeans.
This way,
Billy hollers. I look up in time to see him slow next to a blue-nosed plane with several portal windows. I quietly count the rows. It must seat at least 6 people. My mother had nothing to worry about. I pause to take a picture of the plane with my phone, and then one of the airport behind me, capturing the glassy lake and the mountainous backdrop beyond. It's not until I've rounded the corner that I realize Billy hasn't stopped at the blue-nosed plane. He's past it, heading for one parked farther down the line. Oh my God. Is this for real? I blurt out, gaping at the tiny yellow and orange thing. A toy plane, more wings than body. Billy looks back to smile at me.
What do you mean?
I mean, there isn't even a seat for me.
Yeah, there is. It's behind the pilot. Hey, Jonah.
Billy hollers in between his laughter at the man whose broad back is to us while he fusses with something on the propeller.
I think you've got a nervous flyer. Fantastic,
the man grumbles in a deep baritone voice, tossing a tool into a bag on the ground beside his feet before he turns with obvious reluctance to face us. Diana would have a field day with this one, I note, taking in the thick, shaggy, ash-blonde beard that covers the bottom half of his face, jutting out at all angles. Between that, the reflective aviators, and the black USAF baseball cap that's pulled low over his forehead, I can't see his face. I can't even guess at his age. And he's big. Even in my 3-inch heels, he towers over me. It's hard to tell exactly how bulky he is beneath that checkered emerald green and black jacket, but his wide shoulders make him look hulkish.
Jonah, this is Calla Fletcher.
I can't see Billy's face from this angle, but I don't miss the hidden meaning in the way he says that, an answer to a previous conversation. One I'd probably blush at if I overheard. But I'm suitably distracted from wondering too much about any crude guy jokes, more focused on the plane that's supposed to carry me through a mountain range and on the Yeti who's going to fly me there. How the hell did he even fit into that plane? I take a deep breath as I close the distance, trying to calm myself, to remind myself that it doesn't matter, that this giant got here in that plane and he'll get me back in that plane. Hey, thanks for coming to get me.
Aggie didn't give me much choice.
I stumble over my tongue, searching for a suitable reaction to that response. And Aggie? Jonah studies me from behind those impenetrable lenses for a long moment, and I get the distinct impression that he's doing a head-to-toe once-over.
What are you? 105? 110?
I feel my brows pop. Excuse me?
How much do you weigh?
He says slowly, enunciating each word with irritation. Who asks that as soon as they meet someone?
Someone who wants to get his plane off the ground. I can't take off if there's too much weight, so I need to do the math.
Oh, my cheeks heat with embarrassment, suddenly feeling stupid. Of course that's why he's asking.
So?
135, I mutter. I may be thin, but I'm muscular. Jonah reaches into the plane and pulls out an empty black nylon track bag. He tosses it to me, and I instinctively reach to catch it, dropping my purse in the process.
You can use that for your things.
What do you mean? I frown at it, and then at him. My things are in the suitcases.
Those suitcases aren't gonna fit in here. Billy, didn't you tell her that already?
Billy merely shrugs in answer, earning an annoyed headshake from Jonah. But I can't leave my things behind. There's thousands of dollars worth here. Clothes, shoes, I had to pay $200 in overweight fees to get them here.
If you want to fly with me, you'll have to,
Jonah counters, his arms folding over his wide chest as if getting ready to stand his ground. I stare at my luggage with growing panic.
I'm sure we'll have a cargo plane flying to Bangor tomorrow. I'll get the bags on the first one that can carry the extra weight,
Billy offers in a placating tone. My shocked gaze drifts between the two of them. What choice do I have here? If I don't go with Jonah now, I'll have to find a hotel room and stay in Anchorage until I can get a regular flight. Agnes said it's high season. Who knows how long that will take? Why didn't Agnes send you here in a bigger plane? I grumble, not really looking for an answer.
because the bigger planes are out making money. Plus, no one knew you were planning on moving here.
His voice drips with sarcasm. I'm quickly getting the impression that Jonah does